Hi, this is Rolf from Winterstrain, and you're listening to 99.1 CJAM FM.
It's time for You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD.
Ripley Publishing will again wow audiences with its latest annual Ripley's Believe It or Not, Download the Weird book, an all-new collection of unbelievable stories from around the world. On today's program, we'll talk about many of these stories and the history and phenomena that is Believe It or Not, with my special guest, VP of Exhibits and Archives for Ripley's Believe It or Not, Edward Meyer. Edward, welcome to You Talking to Me.
Well, thanks for having us on the show today.
So you've been with this company for many, many years. Just how long, and how did you get started with Believe It or Not?
Well, I've been with the company 34 and a half years. My current title, and has been my title for quite a while now, Vice President Exhibits and Archives. I started in the archive department as a cartoon cataloger. I went to school to be a librarian, and I took a summer job with a company that I didn't recognize their ad. A company was named Ripley International, Ripley's Believe It or Not, and it wasn't until I actually was in the office that I put two and two together. Mm-hmm. But I was hired at the dawn of the computer age, basically, to computer catalog the famous newspaper cartoon collection. We still run the cartoon. We're, you know, in our 94th year, but I guess at that time we were in our 60th year, and there was an awful lot of material. Very first thing I did was literally to sit and read cartoons for a couple weeks and come up with, you know, a series of category subjects that I thought the cartoon could be broken into. And we came up with a list of about 340 subjects, and we still use that same list 34 years later. There's been a few additions, but for the most part, you know, we got it right the first time. You know, things such as cats, computers, geography, history, science, botany, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, set out on a computer that was bigger than a car to try and categorize 60 years' worth of cartoon material. Now, I'm still the editor of the newspaper cartoon, proud that we're still not just still running, but we are the longest continuous newspaper cartoon in the history of publishing.
Wow.
And, you know, that is really the cornerstone of our company. I'm embarrassed, I guess, to say that, you know, not as many people know about it today as when Ripley was alive, but we still produce it 365 days of the year, roughly 200 newspapers, 42 countries, 17 languages. So it's still a part of my general daily life. But after a few years with the company, you know, both my personal success and attrition, I was asked to combine two different branches of the company, exhibits and archives, mm-hmm. And, you know, took over both parts as vice president. And exhibits is, you know, what we buy to put into our museums. So we keep care of our past history, but we're still building on the collection that Mr. Ripley himself started. And for roughly 28 of my 34 years, I've been the guy that gets to travel around the world and meet interesting and odd people all over the place to continue the legacy that Robert Ripley himself started. I don't draw the cartoon, but I'm part of the writing team, part of the research team, so it's still part of my life too, but most of my hours are spent shopping.
Yeah. Maybe you can tell us some of the most amazing things that you were able to collect over the years, especially early on. What are some of the things that might stand out for you?
Well, I've literally bought everything from grains of rice and toothpicks to full-size dinosaurs and whales. you know, our criteria is that it's odd, unusual, unbelievable, but true. We try to stock our museums with things that you're going to say, wow, I didn't know that, or wow, I don't believe that. And very much, you know, we are trying to get a collection that you cannot see anywhere else. It's unique to Ripley's. So it literally comes in all sizes. You know, I mentioned toothpicks and grains of rice. Well, we went to India and we found people that can write, you know, more than 100 words on a grain of rice. And we've got a guy in Florida that carves, you know, nature scenes, birds, animals, etc., on the ends of toothpicks. You know, that's at the small end, and maybe even smaller. You know, I'm jumping a little ahead, but when we get to talking about our new book, Download the Weird, we have a section on a man making micro miniatures. You can't actually even see them with the naked eye. They're so small. Mm-hmm. So that's one end of the course. And then the other end, you know, you have very large items. We have sculptures of dinosaurs that are virtually life-size, made from car bumpers. We have a full 45-foot-long humpback whale skeleton that was originally part of the P.T. Barnum collection, the very first whale skeleton displayed in North America. You know, it's roughly 160 years old at this point. So our collection scans everything. You know, historically, we have pieces like John Wilkes Booth Derringer. We have pieces of the Berlin Wall, George Washington's hair. I don't know, science-wise, we have everything from two-headed cows to fossils. You know, I mentioned, you know, car bumper dinosaurs, but we also have real dinosaurs. So, you know, the collection is as varied as you can imagine. Early on, and still one of my personal favorites, I do like miniatures. You know, that's sort of my personal lean because, you know, I've got big fat fingers and I can't do anything. But a guy that carved the Lord's Prayer on the head of a pin. Now, this was first displayed at the Chicago World's Fair in 1893. Relatively well circulated on the you know what I would call the sideshow circuit up until about 1930, and then disappeared. You know, people had seen it. You know, you couldn't fake it; it was there, but nobody seemed to know where it went. And in 1988, I found it in a shoebox of miniatures in Seattle, Washington. Wasn't looking for it. I was looking at miniatures in general. And I bought it at that time for the grand price of $500. Today, the piece is valued at over $1 million. And I still think it's one of the most unbelievable things I've ever bought.
Are there many things from Ripley's, believe it or not, that are in the Guinness Book of World Record?
Well, there's a little bit of overlap. You know, the only thing that is in every single Ripley's museum, 32 at this point around the world, 10 countries, is something about the world's tallest man, Robert Wadlow. There just seems to be a general fascination with giants and, you know, the bigger the better, and Robert's the tallest man who ever lived, not just, you know, for his time period. Mm-hmm. So something like Robert Wadlow is fascinating. Ripley was one of the first people to discover him. He had him on his radio show. We got movies of him. We got Ripley cartoons of him. So we very much consider him a Ripley guy. Mm-hmm. But because he is the world's tallest man, you'll find him in Guinness, too. You know, Ripley's is about superlatives, but not to the same point that Guinness is. You know, to be in Ripley's, it has to be strange and unbelievable. Doesn't have to be the biggest, the tallest, the smallest, the fattest. To be in Guinness, it has to be the number one. You know, I'm as interested in a guy who spends 52 years of his life making a big ball of string as I am about a guy that made the biggest ball of string, but it only took him 2 years to do it.
Right. So let's talk about some of the history, I guess, of Robert Ripley and how he got all this started. What was his fascination with the wild and weird news and facts and things of that nature? And I know it started with the cartoon panel.
Well, first and foremost, he's a real guy. There was a Mr. Ripley, Robert L. Ripley, born in Santa Rosa, California in 1890. First published drawing was in Life magazine in 1907. First job was with the San Francisco Chronicle in 1909. From 1909 to 1912, he works in San Francisco. At the end of 1912, he moves to New York City. Now, while he was in San Francisco, he was playing semi-pro baseball. He actually goes to New York to try out for the New York Giants. So baseball was really his first love, and drawing was his hobby. Spring training, 1913, he breaks his arm and is never going to play baseball again. So he turns to cartooning as a full-time occupation. 1918, so he's been a newspaper person for 9 years, but 1918 is the very first cartoon he titles, believe it or not. Throughout the 20s, he is traveling extensively, and he is collecting stories that, you know, for the first 10 years of his career, he's very concentrated on sports stories because he's a baseball player, that's what he knows. But after the success of the first Believe It or Not cartoon, he starts doing what I would call cultural oddities, first at once a week, twice a week. By the mid-20s, he still does the occasional sports story, but the column has really become a catch-all for anything that's strange and unusual. Mm-hmm. 1929, he puts a bunch of his work into a book, and it's that first book that takes him from being a New York journalist to an international star. It is hard to judge the popularity. I mean, you know, pre-television, at the dawn of radio even, this guy is the most popular man in America. He makes movies, he does lecture tours, and, you know, a couple more books. 1933, he opens his first auditorium, spelled ODD. And this was, you know, he'd been traveling fairly extensively in the 20s and would travel even more in the 30s. And I'll get to that in a second. But People were calling him the world's biggest liar. So he starts collecting artifacts on his travels simply to prove his newspaper drawings. You didn't believe me that there was people in Ecuador, South America that have shrunken heads. Well, here's a shrunken head. Right. So the museums come out of, he's collecting this stuff to prove his cartoon. Now he's got a whole bunch of stuff. And initially, he's living in a fairly tiny apartment. So he gets pretty cluttered pretty quick and says, well, let's try opening a museum, which in our vernacular we call auditoriums. Mm-hmm. And it's a massive success at the Chicago World's Fair in 1933. So now he's into a whole new genre of, you know, promotion, production, showmanship in the style of P.T. Barnum, but, you know, with modern technology, because he's doing radio as well. And, you know, he's able to do radio shows from the most obscure places like the North Pole or Pitcairn Island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And it's actually from radio that he has the star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame as a broadcaster. His show was continuous for 14 years, wow. A weekly show, then broke up by World War II, but then back on after the war for another 3 years. So 17 years of radio broadcasting. Again, some people have forgotten that, but at the time, that was a really big deal. Typically, second only to Jack Benny year after year.
And then at some point moving to television.
At the very end of his career, you know, I mentioned his biggest travels were in the 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. World War II sort of, you know, stymies going to Europe and Asia. So he gets very involved with charitable work. You know, he's doing a lot of things with veterans and Boy Scout groups. And, you know, more or less, he's staying at home in the 40s, but he's still very, very visible. And his radio show, even, he changes the title to See America First with Ripley's. And, you know, he concentrates on still doing the same kind of things, but North American-centric as opposed to world-centric. The war stops his radio show briefly. When he gets back onto radio, people are already experimenting with television. And Ripley did one of the very first pilots at the World's Fair in New York in 1940, which became the model for his very first show 9 years later in 1949. In total, he did 13 television shows. The show went on, continued long after he died, up until, I think, 70 shows in total, but the first 13 only with Ripley. He had a heart attack on the air, live television, and died in the hospital 3 days later after his 13th show, wow, which ironically was on Military Funeral Rites, the song Taps. So very, very dramatic, tragic end to a meteoric career. The first permanent Ripley Museum, which is, you know, sort of brings us to where we're sort of at today, his collection, the family took a few odds and ends, but his estate was basically sold at public auction, and a gentleman who was a Broadway producer, Broadway play producer named John Arthur, bought up as much as he could buy and opened the first permanent Ripley Museum in St. Augustine, Florida, in December of 1950, and that museum still exists, so it's in its 62nd year, and that's sort of the cornerstone of our museum business, which really didn't get underway in a big, big way until the late 60s, early 70s. Today, we have 32 museums. The basic Robert Ripley collection that was sold at auction, there's bits and pieces in all 32 of those, but it was in about 1985, 1986, we said we're basically out of Ripley's estate items. So Edward gets the job to take over and to buy more exhibits so that the company can continue to grow and build more museums. So today, shopping is probably about 85% of my job. I have acquired about 25,000 museum exhibits, which is about 4 or 5 times more than Mr. Ripley himself.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, more Ripley's. If you have an interesting career or an interesting life experience that you'd like to share with others, you can contact me, Big JD, at the You Talking To Me website, youtalkingtome.ca. That's the letter U, talking the number 2, me, youtalkingtome.ca. Okay, we're back. Vice President of Exhibits and Archives for Ripley's, believe it or not, Edward Meyer is with us today. Edward, let's talk about the new book, Download the Weird.
This is our annual book. It's the ninth in this particular series. We probably have over 200 books in our library at this point, dating all the way back to 1929. But for the last 9 years, we've put out a premium coffee table style, 256 pages, oversized 9x12, roughly 2,500 stories, 500 great photographs. And this year, what makes it a little bit different, as per the title, Download the Weird, we have a new Ripley telephone app, a smartphone app. Instructions how to get it for free are on about page 3 or so of the book. And there's 17 different pages within the book that have a big flashy logo that says OddScan. And this is visual recognition technology. You take your iPhone or your iPad, take a picture of that logo, the OddScan logo, and it downloads immediately to the Ripley app. No QR, no links in between. You go straight to where you want to be. And there will be more information on the page you've just taken a photo of. Typically, it's more photos. Sometimes it's an interview. Sometimes it's video. You know, in the book, for instance, we've got a great story of a young girl who does very, very realistic portraiture using her lips as opposed to a paintbrush. She literally kisses the paper.
Wow.
So you look in the book, and you know, you get a bit of a giggle, and you get an idea. But if you do that odd scan, you actually see a video of her, how she does it. And it's, you know, in my mind, it's what I call a giggle. You can't help but to laugh out loud.
What's amazing is that Ripley's is always pushing technology.
This is a big step forward for Ripley's. And I'd hazard to say for publishing in general. You know,
sure.
Book people like their books. They're not inclined to go look up something else if they're reading. But this allows you, if you're really taken by this, you can go to another source of Ripley material, find out a bit more, and still be within the Ripley domain without having to go to the library or go on the internet even to check out, you know, some stats from Wikipedia or something. So, you know, it's a way of bundling our information for take-home value, you know, giving you more than you thought you were getting just by buying a book.
Now, there's obviously so many things in the book and so many things that I'd like to talk to you about that are in there. Of course, we're pressed for time in a 30-minute radio show, but at the intro of the book, the table of contents and whatnot, maybe just going through some of that, you can pick out some of these various areas in the book that you can tell us about, something that stands out for you maybe. And let's start with maybe food.
It's almost, I'd hazard to say, a Ripley tradition that we have a chapter on strange eating habits, you know, people that eat excessive amounts of things as well as eat strange things, such as duck tongues, jellied moose nose, an edible dress made from an octopus. I mean, it's just, to me, this is the gross out shock value chapter in the book. I'm sort of known around Ripley's as being the guy that will try everything, but we always have something that I wouldn't go for. You know, I might eat a skull made out of cabbages, but I don't think you're going to get me to eat saltwater bivalve mollusk that's about 2 foot long and looks like a big, you know, very yucky worm. Or how about urine eggs? You know, in China, it's supposed to be a local delicacy to have boys pee on the eggs before you cook them. Just like, not
now
for
that,
me.
That sounds tasty, yeah.
But Jimi Hendrix pizza, you know, is not only a great piece of art, I couldn't wait to eat all those black olives. You know?
How about art?
Well, art is always one of my favorite chapters because, you know, it's typically in here that we get things that I actually get to buy. Don't just get to meet the people, don't just read about them. We actually go and we buy the art, you know. And we mentioned Natalie Iris, who kisses her paintings.
Mm-hmm.
The book shows Jimi Hendrix and Marilyn Monroe. We have Princess Kate and Liz Taylor. Another one of my favorite art pieces. We've got a gentleman who paints hands to look like animals. We show a flamingo, a tiger, and an elephant. And they're wonderful, you know, lighthearted pictures. But when you realize, you know, read the caption and see that it's actually the guy's hand, it's pretty amazing. Got a big hawk, bird of prey made out of broken CDs. We actually have that in our museum in Baltimore, which is our newest museum opened this year. I don't know, lots of good things in the art section. Always one of my favorites. Muhammad Ali, huge sculpture, Muhammad Ali, 26 by 23 by 25, made out of boxing gloves. I just love that piece.
Wow.
Too big for us to acquire, but we certainly gave it our best shot.
And speaking of people, forgive me if I pronounce this name improperly, Ziona Chana, head of the world's largest family.
Well, you know, this guy, this is excessive beyond belief, right?
It is.
67 years old, 39 wives, 94 children, 33 grandchildren, 14 daughters-in-law, and they all live together. It's just like this big, huge mansion of a house, a 100-room mansion. And everybody's there in the same building. It's just like, it's so foreign to me. And this is in the Indian state of Mizoram. So anytime anybody thinks they've got too many relatives, you know, think of poor Zeno.
And then how about some sporting facts?
The sports section is one of the things that we've done a little bit different, just a muck with people's brains, I guess. A couple of the pages are sideways, so you have to turn the book around to, you know, get all of the things. Extreme races, the Yukon Arctic Ultra, grueling 430-mile marathon on mountain bike, skis, and foot. temperatures drop to minus 58 below, plus wind chill, making it the coldest race on the planet. Brazil's seven-day jungle marathon run over a distance of 150 miles through the treacherous Amazon rainforest. Competitors have to sleep in hammocks on the route. Pages of superstitions, weird sports events, freak injuries, sporting celebrities. Billy Joel was once a welterweight boxing champion. Ryan O'Neal boxed as a teenager in Golden Gloves. Actress Gina Davis narrowly missed out of being selected for the U.S. archery team, Olympic archery team in 2000. Mm-hmm. Writer Edgar Allan Poe once held the University of Virginia long jump record. And then, of course, there's just plain weird sports. One of the odd scans, page 85, we got people that slay down, toboggan, down volcanoes. Not for me. Yeah. The redneck game seems to be a popular favorite. This is taken off from the 1996 Atlanta Olympics that, people in East Dublin, Georgia, 5,000 people expected to attend, 5,000 show up, summer redneck games, just pure fun mockery of real sporting events such as bobbing for pig's feet, toilet seat throwing, armpit serenading. Fun? Wow.
Something that I always find interesting with Ripley's is body modification.
Well, I was challenged last year to try and find the world's most unusual woman. Mm-hmm. And we came up with Maria Cristina, the Mexican vampire lady. And she's featured on page 100-101. And again, there's an odd scan feature with more pictures and video of her.
Definitely weird.
Maria is completely tattooed, mm-hmm. But not all one pattern. They're miscellaneous tattoos. Most of them talk about her family. Many of them she did herself, and that just makes me as squeamish as it gets to think that she's sitting, put all those needles into her thighs or into her arms. She, too, has pointed her teeth, has stretched her ears that they're about 5 inches long. She has hair that's about 5 feet long dreadlocks. She has horns in her head. She has metal horns in her head that she can screw in and out so that she can sleep without tearing up her pillows.
Wow.
She has implants along her arms that sort of look like the creature of the Black Lagoon. She has implants on her collarbone above her breastplate that, again, make her look, kind of reptilian. A wonderful lady. Previous life, she was a lawyer. She has 4 perfectly normal children, and you get to talk to Maria. She's seemingly perfectly normal, but I personally don't think I've ever met anyone scarier looking. She looks like a zombie / vampire / Hollywood movie monster.
The new book is pretty amazing and available everywhere. The main website, ripleys.com. Listeners can get a lot more information there. The website is very full-featured. You guys have so much information on the website.
Well, we can find out about Robert Ripley. We can find out about our book, our publishing program. We can find out about our museums. And now we have the phone app connection as well. So, multimedia, multi-leveled. You can even watch movies of yours truly, Edward Meyer, speaking from inside the vault to learn a bit more about our collection. And right now, our big feature is Willard Wiggins, who is in this book, page 148, 149, makes micro-miniature sculptures. I alluded to him a little earlier. To me, this is the most amazing thing in the book, mm-hmm. Download the Weird, and the most amazing person we met in 2012. His sculptures are carved on the heads of pins or in the eyes of needles. In the book, the pictures are magnified 450 times. You cannot see any of his art with the naked eye.
Wow.
Absolutely amazing.
Well, it's been a wild ride, Edward. Believe it or not, we're out of time. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for having Ripley's. The book is Download the Weird, for sale wherever fine books are sold.
Crazy stories, facts, and collectibles. We've heard it all for years and years from Ripley's. They never cease to amaze us with their books and television shows. Make of it what you will, and believe it or not. Check out the You Talking to Me website for info on the upcoming You Talking to Me Pledge Drive specials, and thanks for listening.